Welcome to Drinks Insider, the podcast that's interested in everything you can drink. If it's legal, if you can sell it, and more importantly, if you can make money from it, then we're going to talk about it. So come on this journey into the commercial world of everything drinkable. I'm your host, Felicity Carter, and you're listening to Drinks Insider. Earlier this year, the Wall Street Journal ran a story that read like a startup thriller. Two young founders, three factories, $355,000 of friends and family money, and an almost year-long string of failed production runs, all in the pursuit of a transparent plastic can that could hold pressure. The product is Orca, a lightly flavoured, high-caffeine water designed for people tired of the syrupy excess of mainstream energy drinks. The founders are Michael Moriarty and Nash Hale, longtime friends who met at college and now share a house. Like many people in their 20s, they drank energy drinks daily, but unlike most, they decided to fix what they didn't like about them. In this conversation, we talk about the reality behind that journal headline, the caffeine jitters, the near bankruptcy, and the strange world of beverage manufacturing, but also the small wins, the viral social media, the first Amazon sales, and the quiet thrill of making something that people actually want to drink. They launched in March, and by the end of May, they'd already sold $250,000 worth of product. Don't forget to sign up for the Drinks Insider newsletter at drinksinsider.com. And if you know anybody you think should be featured on Drinks Insider, drop me a line at felicity@drinksinsider.com. Michael and Nash, so like I told you, I read your story in the Wall Street Journal and I loved it and I want to hear all about it. So let's start by you guys met at university is what it said and you shared a house. Can you tell me a bit about your personal backgrounds and how you came to be sharing a house together?
Yeah, I'm from New York City, New York, and Nash is from Manhattan Beach, and we went to college together in D.C. and just kind of became best friends in college and naturally moved in together with a big squad of guys. And I ended up working in tech, Nash in healthcare before we started this venture, but we've been friends for like a decade now.
Okay, so I've got a couple of questions right off the bat. Mm-hmm. What's it like living with a bunch of guys? Are you all good cooks or were you living off pizza?
No, there wasn't a lot of cooking going on. It was not the cleanest environment. We had our parents come and visit and they were...
Something someone working in healthcare should be admitting to? What did you do in healthcare? Or what do you do in healthcare?
I worked in healthcare tech for a company called Metadata that provided software for clinical trials.
Right. Okay. So you've created an energy drink. What made you decide to do this?
Yeah, we both drank tons of energy drinks. And in college, it was Monster and Red Bull. And later, we graduated to the so-called better-for-you options, like Celsius, Yerba Mate, stuff like that. But as we got older and we're drinking these every day at work, I don't want to say we outgrew them, but we grew tired of how they tasted. They all either tasted like candy or felt like soda, neither of which we really wanted at 9 a.m. in the morning anymore. So it begged the question, like, why can't they just take all that caffeine and put it in water? That was sort of what started this journey. And obviously we ended up doing it ourselves.
Can I just go back and ask you about the taste thing? That's really interesting. Is it that you got tired of, I mean, a lot of those drinks have got very artificial flavors. Is it the artificial nature of the flavor or was it the sugar or was it something else that bothered you about them?
I think it was actually like the volume of flavor in there. And like the types of flavor, like Mike said, we were slamming a lot of energy drinks a day. And like at a certain point, a Jolly Rancher Starburst flavored drink at 2:30 PM is just like a lot. And so like Mike said, we were like, you know, I wish there was something way, way lighter and more refreshing. So it was kind of like from a taste POV more so than like the ingredient stack and like the artificial nature of the flavors.
I'll tell you why that's so interesting. So there's a whole lot of research that's come out in the last couple of years that says Gen Z just wants flavor, that everyone wants flavor laid upon flavor upon flavor. And what you're saying is something quite different, that you actually got sick of it, that you just wanted simplicity.
Totally.
Is that just you guys or have you seen that amongst your friends as well?
I think we've seen, I mean, we launched in March. It hasn't been that long, but the reception has been such that I think we were not alone. And that was kind of our, we knew that from the start when we first got our samples from the formulator and kept them in our fridge, and our friends would come over and take them, and we couldn't basically hang on to them. And it became clear we were onto something, and that at the very least there was, no one was sort of going after this flavor profile. Like, the game seemed to be in the better for you space. How can we get this to taste as sweet as possible with, like, having a label that still said no sugar? So basically, yeah, let's make it taste like sun-kissed, but somehow maintain this zero sugar, 10 calorie profile. Whereas we were like, let's make it taste good, like healthy, so we can drink it and not have that nagging feeling. Like, yeah, like Nash said, if you drink a Galaxy Vibe Celsius, even though the back of the label says it's clean, like, you kind of have this gut feeling like it can't really be good for you.
That's so interesting. So I just want to unpack that a little bit. How much of that is wanting that simplicity about taste, and how much of it is, I just don't want all of these additives and other things? How much of it is the health question?
So we approached it from a taste perspective, and it kind of just so happens that when you make a energy drink that's meant to taste like water, it just so happens to be very healthy. And so we've got zero calories, zero sugars, only 5 ingredients. And again, like, we approached the formulation, like, if this doesn't need to be in there, just yank it. Like, we don't want any unnecessary stuff. We want to just deliver the caffeine to people, add a touch of flavor, and remove everything else. And so, yeah, I think we kind of like backed into having the healthiest energy drink out there. But for us, we approached it from a taste perspective.
That is so interesting. I've got so many thoughts about that. Okay, so before we get into the questions about how you did it, what else do you guys drink? What else is part of your normal repertoire? Like, are you beer guys? Do you drink RTDs? Or what do you drink?
Since having gotten into the beverage industry, I think, speaking for us both here, we're now like trying all sorts of drinks, and it's like a much bigger part of our life. I like a lot of the hydration drinks. I love Lemon Perfect. I also drink beer.
I've sort of, as I've gotten older, my drink portfolio has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. Growing up, I hammered sodas. I was a Mountain Dew guy, like a full Mountain Dew addict and Sunkist addict. Now I basically only drink either Orca, which is caffeinated water, or I have like the sleepy powder that I put in my water at night. So all day I'm getting energized with my caffeinated water and hydrating. And then at night I
Okay, so the audience can't see what I can see, but you look pretty fit. Are you somebody for whom physical fitness is really important, or is this just
I appreciate that.
He is fit. Get him to take his shirt off.
Yeah,
I will not be taking my shirt off. I've gotten more into fitness as I've gotten older. I was incredibly unhealthy my whole life, and like have sort of naturally drifted to become more healthy as I've gotten older. But no,
I must say, sitting here on the other side of the microphone at my age, hearing you say as I've gotten older, do you mind if I ask you guys how old you are?
I'm 28.
I'm 27.
Oh my God, you look so old to me. I thought you were going to say like 22, 23. Well, you're looking good for all that water and the caffeine that you consume. Okay, so let's get into this. Do you remember what the moment was that you guys turned to each other and said, let's do our own energy drink?
Yeah, it was in our kitchen of this house that we're sitting in, where I think our roommate had just started a new job and was just like pulling his hair out, like, this is brutal. Like, we got to do something kind of thing. Like, how do we get out of this grind? And we had been sort of sitting on this idea, like, always thought this would be a great idea. No one had made a caffeinated water, really, or had made an energy drink that tasted like water. And in that moment was like, let's get the ball rolling. Let's just, I guess, Google how to start a beverage company and like start, I guess. And
okay, so was this in the morning before you had to slog off to your jobs, or was this late at night one night when you're just like, I've had enough, or was this a weekend over a beer idea?
It was the second. It was after a long day of work, being like, what's our way out, almost.
Rightio, so you Googled how to create a beverage company. And how do you create a beverage company? What did you discover?
So we as a first step, we basically called everyone and anyone we had ever met who had done anything in food, beverage, anything entrepreneurial. And so that was kind of like step one. I think, and then step two for us, again, it was like, is this possible? Why hasn't this been done? So, we went to a bunch of formulators and flavor houses, kind of pitched them the idea, and it was like holding our breath. Maybe there's a reason that people haven't done this before. And so, yeah, the formulation of the drink itself was the first step.
When you say you went to flavor companies, you mean you went and said, I've got this idea, can you formulate it? Or you went and pitched them on the idea, we want to go into business, will you help us out? What were you...
It was, we want to put 150 milligrams of caffeine into something and still have it taste like water. And they were like, oh, okay, that's going to be really hard because caffeine is naturally bitter. And 150 milligrams of caffeine is a lot of caffeine, so that's a lot of bitterness. And so finding like the perfect type of caffeine and the right flavors to mask that caffeine while still having the drink taste light was really difficult and took a long time. And I think that's part of the reason why you have all these energy drinks that have such crazy flavors and carbonation and chemicals and stuff is because, you know, that's a lot of caffeine. And so,
all right, without giving away anything proprietary, I don't expect you to give away your formula. But in general terms, how did you solve that problem? Did you find that you have to put some flavor in to mask it?
It was just iterating. Like we probably worked on it for 6 to 8 months going back and forth with formulators and the team that we worked with and going in for taste tests and leaving insanely caffeinated and having panic attacks. just finding the exact right balance. And it's so delicate because, and like Nash said, we kind of understood how you would arrive at sort of this, the monotonous profile of all these drinks where we're formulating and the person would be like, you know, this is where sucralose would really be the magic bullet. Like you just put some sucralose in there and you've really masked the bitterness perfectly and it tastes great. Like that's exactly what it's missing. And we were like, that's exactly what we're not trying to do. Like we're trying to make it taste extremely light, refreshing, completely different. And yeah, long story short, it was just trying a million times, sips, iterating, changing the flavor until we got it perfect.
One thing about tasting when you do it all the time is eventually, as you become more professional about tasting, your taste changes. Did either of you guys find that happened with you?
Yeah. I mean, you're in there for 4 hours and like by hour four, you're totally lost in the sauce beyond like having a panic attack from the amount of caffeine we were drinking. It gets really hard to kind of discern what's what. And like, I think it's tougher to taste. And we were always like, how do people do this with alcohol? Like that was, and the answer is they take sips and then spit it out. Mm. But yeah. And then I think also like we're cognizant of the fact that our tastes are not like everyone else's tastes. And so that's kind of been the next step from us is really talking to our customers and seeing what they think and iterating based on their feedback. Because I think that's more important.
Just, I'll move off this topic in a second, but the working with the flavor house is actually really interesting. What kind of guidance did they give you?
We initially were talking with flavor houses and then got some advice from a beverage founder to go with a specific formulator in Los Angeles here that basically sources ingredients from different flavor houses all around the country. And then they put together, you know, 20 different lemons and 20 different caffeines or whatever. And then we just try and pick. So they kind of aggregate all the different flavors and we pick the best tasting ones instead of going to a flavor house and having them do a custom.
Okay. Yeah. What was happening with your jobs while you were doing this? I mean, you must have been caffeinated up the wazoo. Did you find that you were way more productive or had you given up your jobs by this point?
We kept our jobs up until the point that we raised our friends and family round, which was about a year ago now. At that point, we were like, we can't ask people to give us money while still working other jobs. But yeah, I on the days that we went into the formulator and flavor houses and tried like a million iterations, like you're kaput for the rest of the day. You can't do anything. So there wasn't much working going on those days.
And finally, where does the name come from?
We just put energy into Google Translate and picked the best sounding one.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. It's Icelandic for energy. We were considering a bunch of other names at that point. We had a really tough time naming it, and like we're considering some really, really bizarre, in hindsight, bad names. And then the way we finally decided is we sent out a survey to a bunch of our friends and family with a bunch of the names, and people could remember it. And so we're like, okay, that seemed good. And okay. So what would work out?
It's a great name, actually. All right, let's talk about the money. The Wall Street Journal talked about $355,000. Did you get advice from anybody about how to raise money, or did you just go around to your family and friends and say, we've got this idea? How did you do it?
We got advice. Like we talked with founders, we talked with people who've raised money before, people who've invested in stuff before, similar to how we prepared starting the beverage company. But yeah, all the money came from friends and family. We had the brand, we had the concept and a prototype of the can that we had funded from our savings. And then just a pretty clear pitch. And yeah, it was twofold. We saw this white space, the energy drink category on two fronts, how these drinks looked and how they tasted. How they looked, we just lined up sort of 20 energy drink cans next to ours to convey this point that, like, you walk into the energy drink section of a store and they're all loud and candy colored and almost like juvenile. And our line was like, if you walked into a board meeting with a Monster or a Red Bull or even an Alani Nu, people would sort of look at you sideways. And we wanted to make something that departed from that. And then there's obviously the drink itself. And like we said, you sip like a Galaxy Vibe soda and know it's probably not great.
That's such an interesting point you were saying about, you know, where you can take the drink and look serious. Was that part of your concept as well, or did that occur to you later?
Totally part of our concept. Honestly, when we first were kind of strategizing the brand, we thought we'd be way more serious than we were and sort of sophisticated and saw this, like, all of these drinks are physical and action and, like, skydiving and fitness and the way we were drinking them was at work and like doing Excel and sitting at the desk. And so we thought, why don't we sort of market it to how people are actually drinking these or how we're drinking these? We've since sort of leaned into our personalities a little bit more and been funnier and different, but it was definitely a part of the original pitch for sure.
All right. So you're good at Excel spreadsheets. So that's probably part of how you managed to raise all of that money. Okay. So then comes the story that got you in the Wall Street Journal. You decided that you wanted a clear package with an aluminium top. I know you say aluminium, but so talk me through the design and creation process. First of all, just how you came up with it. And then we'll talk about what happened when you decided to do a production run.
Yeah. So for the getting to the clear can, we just knew instinctively from the beginning that it had to be clear and the consumer had to see that it was water. But just as important, it also had to look like an energy drink because we weren't adding caffeine to the water category. We were solving a problem with energy drinks. And so that's why like a normal water bottle wasn't an option. And a normal aluminum can would skew too far in the energy drink section side of it. So we needed to split the difference. And so when we first came across the clear can, it was like a no-brainer. The shape signaled energy drink, but the clarity signaled water.
Okay, so you saw this clear can somewhere. How did you – tell me about your process of design and thinking about that and going and sourcing it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, the second we saw the can, we were like, this is the winner.
Where did you see it?
It had actually been used by Monster like 10 years ago for a line of their beverages that they ultimately discontinued. And a few people had taken a stab at it since. So we were aware of it and really wanted to make it work. In terms of design, like for us, the can was just perfect and conveyed everything that we wanted to say about the drink kind of like in visual form. So we were approaching it with a super minimalist design. Like if we could not put a label on it, we would have done that. Really the only guardrail at all was we need to put 150 milligrams of caffeine, like smack right in the center so that people don't get it confused and know that it's an energy drink. That's kind of how we approached it.
But where did you source it from? Did you go out to packaging companies? How did you know that? I mean, if Monster did it 10 years ago, how did you know it was still out there?
We just Googled. Like, it started with, "Is there a clear can? Like, does transparent aluminum exist or whatever?" And then that kind of went us down the rabbit hole of seeing Monster. We reached out to another founder who had done it a little bit more recently with a drink called Tickle Water, which was a carbonated water for toddlers. And so we talked to her, and she's like, "Yeah,
oh, it's a carbonated water for who?"
I think it's for adults, for kids. Called Tickle Water, in this clear can. And she was nice enough to connect us with who she got it from. And that's kind of how we do everything. It's just, someone's done this before. Let's ask how they did it and kind of follow the path.
Right. So what happened when it came time to do a production run?
Things went haywire, basically. We knew it was going to be hard. And like every single person we spoke to kind of cautioned us against using it. Yeah, I mean, like, every conceivable hurdle on a production line that you can imagine, like, we experienced it. And
such as?
So the
Full horror of what happened from word
ago. Okay, sure. So basically, it runs on a traditional canning line meant for an aluminum can. And so every single difference between our can and an aluminum can is an issue. So it weighs a different amount. It's shaped differently. The conveyance on how it moves down the line is different. The way it comes off the depalletizer is different. The sensors you need to recognize that the can's passing through are different. The way that it seamed, the aluminum lid to the body of the can is different. So each of those issues was something that took us, like, you know, months of time and energy and money to fix.
So how did you solve the problem?
Each of those, it was basically, we had to fail each of those things he just said. It's like, you know, get to a factory, they say they can do it, get there, and then, yeah, it doesn't convey correctly. And then it's just production run over. It doesn't work. Or get there and the seaming doesn't work.
So what happened? Did it all just fall on the floor, or did it get crushed, or what happened?
Sometimes. And then, like, you know, we get to the seaming, which is basically the final step, and that doesn't work. And so then it's like, all right, let's call 15 of the top seaming companies in the U.S. and, like, a bunch of seaming consultants and experts and run, like, a ton of
tests.
There
are seaming consultants. Goodness. What did they advise you to do?
It was just a lot of, like, testing and figuring out, like, what parameters work for what types of seamers and, like, what speed we should be going at and, like, you know.
Basically adjusting. There's a current aluminum can set up and you have to make adjustments to fit our can. And it was figuring out what the adjustments were on every kind of step. How do we adjust the depal? How do we adjust the seamer? How do we adjust the way it gets rinsed? And so these consultants would be like, yeah, you got to change. You know, we tested your cans. We're going to change this little, like, diameter of the seam.
Okay, so the day comes that the can works. It's going down the production line. And what happens next?
I mean, first of all, it was like, hallelujah. It had been 2 years of failed production runs and a lot of money down the drain up until then.
One year
of failed production runs, 2 years of we've been working on this. We developed it for a year and then just failed for a year trying to make
it. Were you panicking at any point? I guess you weren't because you had so much caffeine in your system. But was there any point where you were going, oh my God, how are we going to survive?
Yeah. I mean, we were looking at the bank account and the number was going down. So this was like, this was really like our last bullet production run too. It was close.
Our back was against the wall. We were in November prepared to basically give up on it if the last run didn't work.
Okay, so obviously it did work. And then, so what did you pack them yourself and have to sell them from your basement, or how did you sell them?
No, so at that point we had done a super small limited production run at a smaller facility that we had sold on our website to early customers like a year prior. And this production run was like at a much bigger scale. So we were ready to sell through Amazon and produce a lot more cases. Yeah, so we and this was the real challenge was like scaling up the production. And so this was at a much bigger manufacturer that we knew we could scale with over the next couple of years.
Right. Okay, so how did you already have customers? I know you did quite a bit of social media stuff. There's some quite funny social media of you know, I think there's one of you falling over in despair. How did you build the brand? Was this something that you were thinking of as a social media strategy, or are you just guys just on social media and you were documenting it as you go?
No, we're not on social media, so we were new to all this. We were just like trying to get the word out, and it took us so long that we were getting the word out for quite a while, and so we were able to build a pretty good community of followers who were like super excited about the drink and ready when we finally got it done. And that was like something that really motivated us to keep going throughout all this failure, was we knew that at the end of the road, there were a lot of people who wanted this drink and were excited about it and hitting us up every single day. Like, when is it ready? When is it ready? We want to buy it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's it like selling on Amazon? Is there any advice you could give other people who maybe want to sell on Amazon?
I would say just be really dialed in your inventory. I mean, Amazon will charge you if you've got too little inventory, you got too much inventory. It takes a really long time to get it there. There's a lot of sort of, they're not great with sharing analytics and data. And so there's a lot of downsides to going into Amazon as an early sort of startup. But the upside is so great because you have access to, obviously, you know, the biggest e-com market there is. And it's so much easier for our consumers to get it. They can get it anywhere in the United States within 2 days, free shipping, and we're on Amazon Prime. It's just so much smoother for them. And so that was sort of our calculus, was let's make it as easy for the end consumer as possible, and we'll deal with the sort of downsides on our end. But it's a great
problem. Okay, so you've been through all this drama. You've raised the money. You've seen the things fall off the production line, and now it starts to sell on Amazon. Were you hovering over Amazon watching the sales, or did you just click on one day and go, oh my God, we're selling?
We were definitely updating the sales consistently. Yeah, it was really excited to finally get it out there and like see what people thought.
Okay, so you start getting feedback from people. Has that changed the way you make the drink?
Yeah, so like kind of priority number one right now for us is making it taste better and listening to feedback and like iterating based on what people want. So right now we're like kind of reformulating, trying to make it taste better based on what people think, getting ready to launch new flavors that people want. Yeah.
Okay, so you started out wanting something that was just plain without flavors, but you actually have like three different flavors. So is that because you just simply can't suspend caffeine in water because it's too bitter and you've got to have something? Or is it because people are demanding those flavors?
No, it is because we made the decision really early on. Like, there existed some caffeinated waters that, you know, have 60 milligrams, 80 milligrams of caffeine. And our first move was to order them and see how we felt. And it became clear, like, we're solving this problem in energy drinks. And if you're coming from an energy drink background, like, drinking plain water in the morning isn't enough. Like, you want something to hang on to or some sort of ritual. And so, yeah, it just didn't feel right, just drinking water with no flavor. And if you're coming from a Celsius or coming from a yerba mate, that's a huge gap. And so that's why we decided early on to have flavors. We are going to develop an unflavored one because people do seem to really want it though.
Okay, so, but you personally really disliked all of the strong flavors. So if you're going to do flavors yourself, what's the differentiation? Is it just that you're more subtle about it, that you're using different flavors? What's your point of difference?
It's like infinitely more subtle. And it's designed to taste like a light flavored water. So it's like complete day and night in terms of the amount of flavor in the drink.
Okay. All right. So right now you're selling through Amazon. What are your plans in the future for distribution? Are you going to do an Orca Club through your own website? Are you going to try and get distribution in stores? What are you going to do?
Yeah. Right now we're really focused on online. We'll launch our own store. But yeah, we've found that, again, like I said, like, we're really focused on making the product better and learning about our customers, and doing that online is like a really great place to do it. we definitely have long-term goals towards retail, but we're making sure we're ready for that and that the drink is as good as it can be before we do that. So that's how we're thinking about it.
Okay, so to expand, you're probably going to need more money. What are you going to do about getting more funding?
We're actually gearing up for a raise right now. Everything sort of happened a lot faster than we had expected. And we've talked to a lot of people who've reached out, founders, investors, all of the above, who suggest that we raise now and kind of put our pedal to the metal a little bit. Literally last week, we just are starting to figure out the specifics of it. But that's the plan.
Well, and then because of everything that you've done, you get into the Wall Street Journal. Has that sparked any interest?
It has sparked an insane amount of interest.
Apart from me.
I'm not sure we appreciated going into it how much of an effect it would have. I mean, aside from interest from people in the industry, like this podcast or investors or retailers who reached out, I mean, everyone I've ever met, it felt like texted me, which I was not prepared for. But yeah, it's totally, I mean, our sales bump was crazy. It's just been, it was a wild, wild week.
I bet it was. And do your roommates still steal your stuff?
Yeah, they do. They do. That has not stopped.
Okay. So if you were going to do it again, what would you do differently?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know. We've made a ton of mistakes being both new to the industry and first-time founders. But, you know, I think really a lot of the mistakes now are helpful. And like, I don't know if we really would have done anything differently. Like, we've gotten way more into the nitty gritty on the brutal manufacturing side of the beverage industry than we probably expected. But that's just, you know, given us a lot more perspective on like how our drink is actually made, which hopefully will pay dividends down the line.
Okay. So now you've got the manufacturing down and you've got the Amazon thing sorted. What do you spend your day doing? What's the best use of your time? Is it fundraising? How much of your time do you spend marketing and doing social media? What's the breakdown of what you do?
Well, it is still just us. Like we just had a conversation this morning where they were asking, who does your accounting? Like who does your supply chain, whatever. And it's just us basically. And so we're every day just have a mountain of stuff to do and sort of try and split it as efficiently as possible. Marketing takes up a ton of time. I mean, to generate content takes a lot of time.
Which of you is the best at content?
We both do everything.
Very tactful. So which social media works really well for what you're doing?
I think, well, they all work well for different reasons, but really all of them are now, like, it's such a visual product. So like TikTok, we've done really well just like taking photos of the drink. And right when we started, Mike posted a photo of the drink on Twitter that went like crazy viral, which was really exciting. And you know, like we sent that to our investors and we're like, you know, how many drinks can you just like take a picture of and have it get 8 million views? So I think that speaks to how focused we were on the design and how important the clear can was for us. I mean, it was like we've said, it was a nightmare for 2 years, but now it's finally starting to pay dividends.
And with that long lead time, was everybody who gave you money very sympathetic, or did you start getting emails saying, when am I going to get my money back?
they were maybe a little bit antsy. Now they're happy and maybe wish they gave us more money. But they understood. And like, we had really frank conversations with them throughout, like, because at any time we could just switch the packaging. But I think we conveyed to them how important it was that it was in this clear can, and they got it. They got the vision.
I would also add the big, like we said, we had teased it on social media before we'd gone through all this manufacturing hell. And so I'd seen that people were really responsive. Like we had an email list of 10,000 people before we had our first failed production run event. So that was, it makes it a little bit of an easier pill to swallow, knowing that there was people on the other end of it kind of waiting for this product.
Okay. Final thoughts, if you were going to offer advice to somebody else who wants to be a beverage entrepreneur, what's the biggest piece of advice you would give them?
Do it with a co-founder, I would say. I mean, like it's, it's pretty brutal, and the highs are really high and the lows are incredibly low. And so I think it's helpful to share that with someone.
I was going to say the exact same thing. To do it alone is, I have serious admiration for people who do it alone. I would also add, you just have to be totally sort of delusional in your belief of your product. It's like everyone along the way will say, beverages is a stupid business, like you're 99% fail, yada, yada. And you just have to sort of be insane about it and think you're different somehow.
All right. Well, on that positive note, thank you both very much for joining us. You've been listening to Drinks Insider, the podcast that explores the intersection of beverages and commerce. Now, if you would like a summary of this episode, sign up for the Drinks Insider newsletter, which sends you the takeaways. Just go to drinksinsider.com and add your name. And if there's something you think we should be talking about, drop me a line at felicity@drinksinsider.com. And before you go, please don't forget to rate this podcast. 5 stars are most welcome.